Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. Nice to see you.
Good to be back.
Hey, you know, this is a show that you definitely are going to want to hang around for. Because sometimes I know you kind of sneak out and try to go do other things, but I want you to hang around because this topic today is something that's universally applicable to all individuals. I think that the skills we're going to talk about today are something that are going to be easily translated to both men and women of all ages. And it's something from my therapeutic training and background that is essential in healing, mental health, physical healing, emotional healing in all ways. So I want you to hang out, Hank, and pay attention to what's going on.
Can I listen in my car while I have lunch?
Absolutely. You may listen in your car while you're having lunch. But do hang around because this is going to be a great topic. And, you know, it's interesting because I think the topic that we talked about doing this week and advertised is going to have to be pushed off a couple weeks because I have a guest in the studio today who's going to enlighten us about creative journaling in a way that's going to be more important than our topic, which can be on hold for a couple weeks. So those of you who thought you were tuning in for a conversation about millennials and their parenting skills, hang on to that thought because we're going to come back to it because today I have Lucia Capacchione in the studio with me, and she is bringing years of wisdom when it comes to arts therapy, expressive arts therapy, and creative journaling. She's actually celebrating the 35th anniversary edition of her book, The Art, The Creative Journal, The Art of Finding Yourself. And you're going to have an opportunity to actually meet Lucia. She'll be signing books at Barnes & Noble this weekend and also at the Painted Lily Gallery in Cambria on Saturday. But first, we're going to find out what the creative journal is all about and why journaling is so fundamental to maintaining our mental health and well-being and also for helping us to cope with problems, to address areas of concern. And the thing that's interesting about journaling, and I'm hoping that Lucia will help me with this from a therapist perspective, it's one of the areas we get the most pushback when we're working with clients. We assign journaling as a homework piece the majority of time, probably in therapy. We assign some form of journaling, and clients are usually a little resistant if they're not someone who journals often. But the thing that's interesting about journaling is one of the few interventions we have in the therapeutic world that actually has a lot of evidence-based support, that there has been a lot of research done supporting the power of journaling and helping us deal with mental health concerns. So, having said that, thank you for tuning in to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I am Elizabeth Barrett. You can be part of the conversation today by calling 805-781-3875. We'll open the phone lines in a little bit. You can also participate by liking our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or checking out our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. I always enjoy getting emails to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And we are now on iTunes. So if you like to download podcasts and listen to them at your own convenience, you can find our previous shows, The Reluctant Therapist, through iTunes. And if you're really tech savvy, you can subscribe to the shows and have them delivered to your computer and then downloadable onto your device weekly. But that's a little above my technology intelligence. So hopefully you have a child in the house that can help you do that. So having said that, welcome, Lucia, to the show.
Thank you.
And I am really kind of wanting to find out, because if this is the 35th anniversary edition of the Creative Journal, you must have been way ahead of the curve when it came to journaling as a therapeutic tool.
Yes, I was.
So tell me about your journey to journaling.
Well, I discovered it because I was dealing with a very mysterious and what turned out to be life-threatening illness. And I use this to save my life.
Okay. So you had to back me up a little further. Yeah. So how, pre-journaling, what was your life about?
Well, I originally was an artist. I worked for Charles Eames, a very famous furniture designer, when I got out of college.
Where were you from originally?
Los Angeles.
Okay.
And I had studied with Sister Mary Carita, who's now undergoing a great renaissance of interest in her work, graphic designer at Immaculate Heart College. After the Eames office, I had my own very successful practice as a designer, designing toys for Mattel, graphics for Hallmark. I had a whole line of poetry posters that are on eBay now. Somebody's got a whole bunch of them and selling them. And I then went into work in Head Start. When my children were young, I became so fascinated with early childhood education and development that I took training in the Montessori method, and my children were in Montessori school. And that was 1965, and that was the summer of the Watts riots and of Head Start. And I became one of the first Head Start directors in the United States.
So you started your life and career in Los Angeles, it sounds like, and were raising your children and family there. And also Montessori work was ahead of the curve. So how did you find your way into the Montessori world?
I read about Nancy McCormick Rambusch in Time magazine, and I was also told about the method when my first child was born. A shopkeeper mentioned it to me, and I didn't know what it was, but I looked into it. And at that time, Montessori schools were opening in Southern California. This is in the early 60s. And I got so excited about it, I got some of her books and was totally fascinated. So I actually enrolled my oldest child in a Montessori school when she was an infant, because they said, if you don't get her on the list now, she might not get in.
So I put her in.
Yeah. And both my girls went to Montessori schools in Southern California. And then I got so fascinated. In fact, I was jealous. I wanted to go to school with them. It looked like so much fun. And I decided in 1965 to take the Montessori training program in Southern California. And the Watts riots broke out while we were in training. Our training program was in the inner city. And some of our students were quarantined. They couldn't get to class. And I just felt, you know, I don't want to work in upper middle class preschools, which is what Montessori was in those days. I really want to get right down in the middle of this and do something about what's happening here. And so I was appointed by the Catholic Archdiocese to be their Head Start director in the end of 1965.
So was it revolutionary in a way to bring Montessori to the Head Start program, or was Head Start originally designed around Montessori?
Well, Maria Montessori started her first classes in the slums of Rome in the San Lorenzo district. And she was very famous as a pioneer in early childhood education that was structured. She started with children who were called in those days feeble-minded. And she got those children to the point where they could go to a public school. And so then she opened Casa dei Bambini in Rome. And that was very famous. People from all over the world were coming to visit. And then, of course, there was a renaissance of interest in her work in the early 60s with Nancy McCormick Rambusch, bringing it, sponsored by the Skakels family. Robert Kennedy's wife was a Skakel.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what was it about Montessori? What is it about Montessori that so resonated with you?
Well, because I was an artist, I was very, very taken with the sensorial materials. I was also a designer. I had worked for Charles Eames. And so when I saw all this equipment that she had designed, and the whole idea of children learning through the equipment and not being dependent on a teacher, that the teacher's role was there to assist the children, not to direct them. And that was a whole different spin. I'd gone to parochial school, so I had no concept of a teacher as an assistant, a facilitator. And also Maria Montessori's belief that the child had an inner knowing, and that if each child followed their inner knowing to whichever materials attracted them, they would be motivated and they would really engage with the material and with the learning. And, of course, that's very pioneering stuff. And we're talking about 1906 in Rome. Yeah.
And I wonder, and, of course, our topic is not just around Montessori, but since we are there, I often wonder if ADHD would be better served in a Montessori classroom than in a...
There's no question about it. I think almost every condition that we're seeing and pathologizing today in schools would be remedied with really good Montessori classrooms and really good art programs.
Well, and of course, the arts piece is something that people mourn all over the country, and yet for some reason, it still struggles to be reestablished or
and it makes that people. Makes no sense because there's research I've done, two bodies of research in elementary schools in Southern California and Texas that have proven without doubt that the arts in the classroom and creative journaling in the classroom increases academic scores, it lowers behavioral referrals to principals' offices, and in our last research in 2014, I have a book called The Creative Journal for Children that we used in that school, we found that the children did not go to the nurse's office on testing day because Texas standardized testing is excruciating, and these children would be in the nurse's office on testing day throughout the district. And the nurse was shocked because on testing day in our program, we only had one semester there, there were no sick kids throwing up or having diarrhea or any of that. And we weren't looking for that when we brought the University of Texas Pan American in to monitor the program. We were just looking at behavioral referrals to the principal's office and academic scores. And we got the first two, no question. But the third was a surprise.
And so when we talk about the arts and creative journaling and working with children, because I think so many people resonate with how are we serving or not serving our children today, I think that one of the struggles we have is that we have taken the training of teachers, right, and shifted the training to accommodate that medical model of ADHD or testing. And so in order to reestablish the arts in a Montessori-based or creative journaling program in schools, we have to get back to the teacher training, right, in some way?
Absolutely. Well, the teachers are just as stressed out as the children. Mm-hmm. You can't have a stressed out kids with all these problems and not have stressed out teachers. So to me, the training needs to be humanized. And that's what we've done in Texas and also in Southern California. I did a big project in 1981-82, right after this book came out. I was invited into the Garvey District, which is east of East Los Angeles. And we're talking about Asian and Hispanic kids and a lot of Cambodian children who are boat people. These kids were suffering with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And so we found that the Creative Journal in one school, actually two schools, one was K to six, the other one was K through three. In 1 year, we raised reading and math scores as much as 20 percentile points. But that's not the most important thing as far as I'm concerned. It is important, but what I'm looking at is emotional growth, and I'm talking about emotional literacy. I frankly do not know what emotional intelligence is, and I don't think any of that can be measured. We know about the neuroplasticity of the brain now, so measuring any of that stuff with numbers to me is ridiculous. But I do know about emotional literacy, and that means the ability to express one's emotions, and the arts are the language of the emotion. So without that piece in education, we're going to have all this other pathological alphabet soup stuff going on because we don't really know what we're doing at the basics about educating children. If we're just slapping on left brain stuff after left brain stuff and the right brain's being left out by the school door, then we're just going to be compounding our problems. And I think that's what we've been doing.
And that's what we see. And if you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Lucia Capacchione, and she's an author and expressive arts therapist celebrating her 35th anniversary edition of the creative journal, The Art of Finding Yourself. And we haven't even scratched the surface as to all of the accomplishments of Lucia getting to this place in her life today. We just got to Montessori teaching. So at what point did you transition from Montessori, and did you earn your PhD early on, or was that after the Montessori?
No, the master's degree and the PhD came as part of my art therapy career.
Well, so let's talk about that.
Yeah, to step back to 1973, I found myself in bed, very, very ill, not able to function, and not knowing what I had. I went to doctors. The first doctor made the first big mistake. He diagnosed me with a virus and then gave me an antibiotic, which is like apples and oranges. And doctors have told me since that was ridiculous. And I had a whole bunch of side effects. All kinds of infections and conditions and anxiety, and it was just a mess. I was a mess. Now, I had
You still have young children? I'm sorry, at that.
Yes, I did. Yeah, my children were still in elementary school, two daughters, and I was a single parent at the time. And I had recently been through 5 years of chaos. My father had been diagnosed in those days manic depressive. He had had shock treatments. My parents' marriage dissolved after 40 years. My marriage had dissolved at the beginning of their dissolution, and it was just 5 years of chaos. And my body just finally broke down.
But, of course, the medical model doesn't recognize the 5 years of emotional chaos.
Exactly.
So carry on.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in bed, and I was realizing that the doctors didn't know what they were doing because I kept getting these side effects. And then I'd be sent to a specialist, and they'd be looking. It was the old elephant story. They'd all be looking at one little part of my body, and nobody was looking at my psyche, of course. And so it was just a free-for-all crazy mess. And I got really panicky when I got a phone call from the HMO I was going to, yet another call, and they said, you know, don't take that medication we gave you that we just filled in our pharmacy. It was somebody else's. We got your prescription mixed up with someone else's. Well, I flipped. I'm Italian through and through 100%, and I just had an Italian flip out. And I went into the bathroom, and I took all the medicines out of all the bottles and threw them all in the trash. I was just furious. And I said to myself, I will never go back there again. And I'm getting rid of all these medications. And I don't know what I'm going to do, but I know it's not that. And I went back to bed and I just sat there and asked myself, what in all these weeks that I've been in bed has made me feel better? And one of the things I had started doing was keeping a journal. It was really a sketchbook that had morphed into a journal where I was doing drawing and writing. I'd draw my dreams out. I'd scribble my feelings out. I'd write about them. And I said, that makes me feel better. And I thought, okay, well, then that's what I'm going to keep doing. And I'll figure out what to do otherwise as I'm doing this journaling. And because I kept getting insights and expressing my feelings. So, of course,
But where did you get the idea to even start the journaling to begin with? Because at that time, I mean, maybe there was some hints of journaling out in the public, but mostly we were still talking about Dear Diary, right?
Yeah, there was nothing. There was nothing.
So where did you even...
I was reading Anais Nin's diary. It just started being published in volumes. And I was reading Man and His Symbols about the work of Carl Jung, which is all in pictures, of course.
Yes, it is.
So my artist self really ignited when I looked at that book about Jung's work and the artwork and the work that he did and that he did with his clients. To me, he is the first art therapist. Hmm. Yeah, I really believe that. And Anais Nin's diary, well, I resonated so much with it, with her Catholic background and just, you know, her own inner journey. And I saw how she changed in these volumes and from this young person. And the teen journal wasn't out yet, the diary. But I just watched her changing and I thought, you know, maybe what I'm doing in my sketchbooks here is really what she was doing. Mm-hmm. And I really took my example. So it was almost like on the one hand, I was reading about the personal unconscious in her diaries, and I was reading about the collective unconscious in the Jung work and seeing all of the universal images, the mandalas and, you know, various motifs throughout all of history. And those two bits of influence really got me clear that I needed to continue with this journal. And I shared it with a friend of mine who had a background. She wasn't a psychologist then. She became one later. But I showed my journal to her, and she said, this is great stuff. You know, you really need to continue this. And she had watched me going from health to illness and starting to come back up. And I also went into therapy. I found a woman who did a combination of Neo-Reichian energy work, Gestalt therapy, and transactional analysis.
It was a great time to go into therapy, too, in the 70s, because we weren't so limited by insurance. So what a great time to enter
exactly.
into it.
Exactly, yeah. So I had that wonderful therapy experience for 3 months. And she was a radical therapist. She said, what do you want to work on? Okay, we're going to work for 3 months, once a week. And at the end of the 3 months, we're going to reevaluate. And if you've resolved this issue, like your physical health for one, then we're done. And that's what we did. 3 months, and I was out of there. I was back working. I had my physical health back. And I brought my journals into the therapist, and I showed her what I was doing. She didn't assign journaling. I think I gave her that idea. But the thing that I introduced to her was the use of a journal during the week in between sessions. And she said, you've moved very quickly in 3 months. That's why I'm saying we don't need to do anymore. And I think this journal had a lot to do with that. The other thing was that she introduced me to writing with my non-dominant hand, which I'm famous for. But she just did it to get me in touch with my inner child and to have me write, you know, in this very childlike scrawl what I was going to do that week to apply what I'd learned in the session. And that's it. She had me sit on the floor with newsprint paper and regress. I mean, I felt like I was 5 years old learning to write again. And I wrote down that I was going to feel my feelings and, you know, feel that they were okay. And walked out of there feeling 20 pounds lighter. But in my journal, I started having battles with my inner critic and my inner child. I'd be writing, and I'd hear the voice of the inner critic, and I started writing it in the second person to get it out of my head, externalize it like a recording. I'm transcribing a recording now. And it started criticizing some creative ideas I had, and then my left hand, I'm right-handed, grabbed the pen, I mean, just forcibly, and started sassing back. So I encountered this inner brat. And that inner brat, I think, saved my life because it brought this energy out, and I started to confront this human issue that we all deal with, is inner criticism, self-judgment. And, of course, that led to my best-selling book, Recovery of Your Inner Child, eventually. But I introduced that idea in the Creative Journal. And that got so much traction. I mean, in interviews and workshops, people loved that work. And I explained to them that I couldn't have written this book without that because I had a crippling writer's block when I started this book. And just going to my journal and writing down, and I actually reprinted it in the book, you know, you're no author, you can't write, you know, what's the stuff you've written, blah, blah, blah. No publisher's ever going to accept this. And my inner brat basically told the critic off. And from that one journal entry, I was able to go to my office and write the book in 3 months. And it was a perfect book. I mean, the editor said, I don't have to do anything to this book. It was my
first
book.
You're talking about The Recovery of Your Inner Child?
No.
Oh, the Creative Journal,
my first book.
Oh, okay, so this came before.
Yeah, my first book, yeah.
So from the therapist standpoint, I'm still back to, how long did it take you from that first session to getting out of bed? You know, to feeling like I've got the energy to start moving.
It was a process of about 2 or 3 months. Yeah, I started in therapy in early October, and by Christmas, I was, you know, really thinking about getting back to work, and I had the energy to even, you know, entertain that thought, because prior to that, I didn't. I was just depressed and low energy and dealing with all these side effects of all this medication and just lost. I really did not know where to go. But I did realize at some deep level in my journaling, I was drawing pictures of people on earthquakes and things falling apart. And something told me inside that I was going through a major transition to where I didn't know. And of course, it was a new career.
So let's talk about that transition then, because you weren't an author or an expressive arts therapist when you went to this therapist to get healed.
Right.
So, but you wrote the book immediately after?
Well, I wrote the book in 1977. It didn't come out till 1980. That's another whole story. But I actually wrote the book in the first few months of 1977. What happened was that when I started getting well, I shared my journal with a couple of other friends who were students in psychology courses, and they were all saying, you should become an art therapist. And I said, what's that, basket weaving in mental hospitals? No, thanks. And they said, no, art therapy is a very new field. In those days, the American Art Therapy Association was just a few years old. It's a psychotherapy field that involves using drawing the way you would talk about dreams to get into the unconscious and to express your emotions. And I said, well, that is what I'm doing. But I'm writing about it. They said, yeah, but that's the whole point. You draw the stuff out first, and then you put language to it, and that's what you do in an art therapy session. So I said, well, that sounds intriguing. And one of these women referred me to a pioneering art therapist in Southern California who had had a similar background to my own. She had worked for United Productions of America, which was a very pioneering animation studio in North Hollywood, just a few blocks from where I was raised. And she had become an art therapist. And I went to her to find out what it would be like to be on the client side of that. And after my first session, I knew this was it. I was hooked. I was like, yeah, those guys were right. I should
this
become
is
a
who
therapist.
I am.
And I started doing research. I did not want to go sit in classrooms. I did not like school except for Immaculate Heart College, studying with Sister Carita. School bored me to tears, and I just didn't want any part of it. I didn't want to do any of that. So what I did was I researched, and a friend of mine took me to Goddard College in Los Angeles. They had an external degree program where I could design my own master's program. If I found a mentor and we had an agreement and had to be an expert in the field, and of course I found Toby Reisel, who was a pioneer, and we designed a program together, which involved a lot of reading in Jungian psychology, you know, any kind of memoirs I could get, a lot of archetypal art and that sort of thing. And I created my own program, which involved the first part of my master's thesis was the creative journal method. What is it all about? What are the benefits of it? What are the magic ingredients and how it saved my life? And then I also had a section which was a private client case study in art therapy. And my third section was group workshop techniques that I had developed for working with classes and seminars. So that's how I got into it. And within a couple of years after my illness, I was in that master's program, 1974 to 75. And in January of 76, I opened my private practice in Santa Monica.
And so for those who aren't familiar with the journaling process or the creative journal, let's talk a little bit about why journaling is effective. Why does it work the way it does?
Well, I think
and what does it do for
I think
people?
Journaling is effective, especially if there are journal prompts to guide an individual into specific areas of their life. My journal method is absolutely unique. There are others that are doing art journaling now. There was nothing like that when I was doing this. The ProGraph Journal was happening, but I didn't know about it until a year or two after I was into my own method. ProGraph's method is all writing. Mm-hmm. Being an artist, I approached these as sketchbooks, and I was drawing most of my stuff out. But then after reading on Anaïs, I started writing. And I put the two together and realized later on, when I heard about Sperry's work at Caltech, that I was doing a method that was right and left brain. Because drawing, as we know, is a primarily right brain phenomenon. And the writing and any use of language is left brain. But I've also come across a sort of transitional technique that integrates the hemispheres, writing with a non-dominant hand. And when you write with a non-dominant hand, you're using both sides of your brain. You're getting the content, the emotions, the intuition, and the spiritual insight from the right brain, but you're pulling it through the corpus callosum, which is a bundle of nerve fibers that connects the hemispheres. You're pulling that content into the language centers of the left brain, and you're able to then express. In other words, you're letting your left brain know where your right brain is thinking and feeling. That's really what's happening physiologically.
And can anyone do this?
Yes, we've worked with 5-year-olds and even below, 4-year-olds, all the way up to senior citizens. We're working with every population you can imagine, people with PTSD, with all kinds of psychological and emotional issues. We've worked in school districts, as I've said, all over Southern California and in Texas. We've worked with veterans with PTSD. We've worked with cancer patients. We have a cancer support group right now in Southern Texas that is using the journal in the groups. And I've interviewed, in fact, I just met some of them last week when I was there. I've interviewed some of the group members, and they really tell me that this saved their lives. They were so depressed from chemotherapy and from what they described as the cold and impersonal atmosphere of the medical treatment. As well-intended as the professionals were, they just felt that emotionally they were just left hanging out to dry. And when they got to these cancer support groups that my business partner, Marcia Nelson, has conducted, they coming back to life, basically. They're coming out of depression. They're coming off of medication. Just amazing things happening.
You're listening to Lucia Capicchioni. She's my guest today, the author of the creative journal, The Art of Finding Yourself. It's the 35th anniversary edition. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3875. Any questions or comments? You know, I'm always curious to know what people are thinking when they hear something that they might not have been previously aware of, like creative journaling and the old idea of Dear Diary, you know, and when I assign the journaling to my students at school, that's the pushback I always get. You know, it's just Dear Diary. I'm just writing about, you know, what I did today, or as always, negative things. I'm just writing about the things that don't work in my life. And so the whole education process of trying to utilize journals in a different way and to try to, in one way, get rid of the stigma of how boring journaling can be. And on the other hand, helping people not be afraid of what they're going to unleash, I think, in the journaling process. Because I also hear that quite often from clients, is that they're afraid to allow that inner child or that left non-dominant hand do any speaking because of what might come up. 805-781-3875. You're listening to Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. So, Lucia, how do we help people begin creative journaling if they've never experienced before?
Well, one of the things that I do, I'm a little different than most therapists. I tell my clients that they are going to have to keep a journal, and if they don't want to, then they won't be able to work with me. It's as simple as that. And usually people come to me because they have gotten one of my books. And they either want to keep a journal and can't quite get started and they want my guidance, or they've been keeping a journal and it has changed their lives so much that they go, well, if I just get this from working with this book, maybe I ought to do the therapy too. And when I do the therapy, I usually work with this book, The Creative Journal, depending on the needs of the client, or my standard book is Recovery of Your Inner Child. I do 12 sessions with them, and we work through all of the journal exercises in that book. And that book is fabulous for people with recovery issues. I think the reason my journal method works is because these books are filled with journal prompts. It does not allow people to get into, you know, poor me, I'm so sad, my life isn't working, I hate my job, you know, my relationship is a mess. It doesn't allow people to go sink down into that. What it does do is it asks specific questions, like the current challenge in your life. Draw a picture of it. And when you start drawing a picture of it, you get into some insights that you absolutely would never be able to get with words. You can't. This is beyond words. And it really is more like having a dream on paper. You really get to the unconscious and the deepest places of the unconscious. And it just cuts to the chase. So people can get to those places that they would get to in dreams if they could remember their dreams or if they wanted to work with them, you know.
But what about the fear piece? You know, that people talk about, what's going to come out of me? You know, how will I deal with this deep, dark, scary place?
Well, the great thing is that they can look at my books and start getting eased into it by reading my story, seeing the illustrations of my students and clients, the things that they've done with the prompts, and it starts to inspire them. And they'll look at a drawing and go, oh, yeah, that picture of that face, that's how I felt about something that happened to me last week. I can relate to this. And it's not fancy art, you know, because, of course, in my method and in all art therapy, the first objection is, I don't have any talent. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not artistic. I'm not creative. And so this helps them because my books are full of very primitive looking, very child. When I used to have the early editions of the manuscript photocopied, the people at the photocopy store want to know what the ages of the children were that did the artwork. And I go, no, these are all adults. They're anywhere from 25 to 65. Oh, really? Yes, because we're not making art here.
Right, and that is the difference. It's not, we're not talking about the artistic quality. We're talking about the story that the art is trying to tell
us. That's right.
805-781-3875. Hi, Wayne, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
My question for your guest has to do with computer games, particularly as they apply to preteens. Is that an artistic expression? Are there benefits from playing these games that are so full of violence and destruction and just general conflict.
Well,
is there a benefit there?
Thank you, Wayne.
I wish my daughter were here. She's a professor at Northeastern University, and her specialty, and she is a pioneer in game design, and she is a proponent of games that are nonviolent. And she could answer your question to that. I feel that the preponderance of violence on television and in games does not help us at all. I am really very concerned about this generation. So I'm just going to tell you what I've observed as a therapist, but my daughter could tell you more about the research and about that field because that's her specialty. While we're on that subject, people always ask about my method, can you do this on a computer? And no, you can't. I'm a Montessorian through and through, and I absolutely believe that this kind of work that I am teaching must be done by hand. You cannot scribble out feelings on a computer screen or on a tablet. You've got to have crayons and felt pens. You've got to be able to scribble so hard that you make a hole in the paper if you're that angry. You've got to be able to express sadness in any way that you like, but it has to be sensorial. You've got to use your hands, art materials, get your hands dirty.
Thank you, Wayne, for calling. And it is interesting because one of the things that I come up against at school all the time is the kids want to use their computers to take notes and, you know, they want to have them with them all the time. And what I've read, the research as far as taking notes, the neural pathways between the hand and the brain help you remember what you're writing down better if you're actually handwriting it. So I would assume that would be the same when it comes to doing therapy or art therapy.
Absolutely.
that connection between your hands and your brain is essential.
Absolutely. Montessori taught reading from writing. She had children tracing the alphabet letters with their fingers. She had large alphabets. She had them made out of sandpaper. I had them made out of velour because I like velour better. And in my Head Start program, which was a Montessori program, the children learned to write before they learned to read. They got it into their entire body sensory system, not just through their eyes. And if children were taught to read that way, we know from Montessori schools, my kids were reading at 3 years old, 3 and a half, 4 years old. They had it nailed. We would not have the problems we have in school today if we were teaching with the right materials at the right age. The other thing about it is that we have research now that shows that if you do not do longhand writing, there are certain parts of the brain that you will not develop. And so schools now are getting rid of longhand writing, cursive. Right. And I think this is a gigantic mistake. We're going to have more problems now.
And it is interesting because that's one of my show topics coming up is the elimination of cursive. My family's in the art materials business, actually. And so that's a big concern for those manufacturing art materials. That if we take everything out of the hands of people, what are we giving up developmentally? There has to be something we're losing. And it seems that is our knee-jerk reaction to all things in our culture, that the shiny object comes up and we throw out the baby with the bathwater.
We're losing the body. The children are losing sense of their body, of the physical environment. This is all right brain stuff, visual, spatial perception, emotional expressiveness, intuition, and spiritual attunement. This is all right brain stuff. The schools are throwing it all out. They're creating more psychological and physical problems. The childhood obesity right now is just outrageous, and we're wondering why. Our kids are not getting exercise. They're sitting with devices in their hands all the time. I see it in this next new generation of great-grandchildren, my great-grandchildren now. And it breaks my heart to see it because we know what the answers are, but there's so much in terms of economics and convenience for the bureaucracy of schools. They want to do what's convenient. Yeah, sit them down at a computer just like they do with, you know, parking kids in front of a television set. And it's not as messy, and it's much more easy to control. And great, it's very convenient, but what's it doing for the children?
805-781-3875. This is Lucia Capacchione. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about journaling, the creative journal to be exact, which is Lucia's work, and how by introducing journaling to children's lives and to our own lives, we can heal many of our social emotional issues. And listen to what I'm saying to you. This is therapy. This is therapy without meds. This is therapy that can get us out of bed and out of depression and out of anxiety by utilizing our hands and a piece of paper. Rachel, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I think that journaling is very, very valuable. I have a child who doesn't like to write. So I'm wondering, since Lucia worked with children, has she ever dealt with something like, doesn't like the physical act of writing?
I don't work with children personally. I train adults working with children. But what we have found in our research projects is that if children use the method that is described in my book, The Creative Journal for Children, which is available in bookstores, it's written for adults to work with children. So it's the subtitle is a guidebook for parents, teachers, mm-hmm. and counselors of young children from ages 5 to 15. And the journal prompts in that book start with drawing. And what we have found is that children who don't like to write, if they start by drawing, the writing starts to be more interesting. It starts to be an adjunct to the drawing. And if you put the drawing first, they can really get into it. There's also research that shows that boys who are usually lagging behind in language skills in the elementary school level and even middle school, that if they draw first, their language skills come up to the same level as girls the same age. So there's a lot of research about this, and the importance of drawing first and then writing cannot be underscored enough. That's what we found in all of our research.
And Rachel, is there also, how old is your child?
13.
Mm-hmm. So if we're at 13, is it, you know, I wonder if there's a piece of feeling pressure at school or feeling, you know, that he's behind. Like, is there some bad experiences with the writing throughout school that kind of put him there? Or has he always not liked writing?
Just never liked it.
Well, he may be a visual spatial learner, and that's the problem. Those kids don't do as well in school that is more language-based. And so that's why I'm saying two- and three-dimensional art would be fantastic for this kid. I also have a book that can be used directly by the teenager, which is what I would recommend for this child, and that's called The Creative Journal for Teens. And these books are all available online. I have them at my website. I send out signed copies, if that's important to you, at luciac.com, but all of the other online and big bookstore sellers of books have my books.
And Lucia's going to be at Barnes & Noble in downtown San Luis Obispo on Sunday from
2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock. Right. And on Saturday, if you're in North County in Cambria, she'll be at the Painted Lily Gallery.
And that's sort of a salon. I'm going to be there on Saturday from 1 to 5 because I work in the gallery. I'm one of the co-op artists. And so I'll be there from 1 to 5 chatting with people, explaining which book is doing what. Because I've actually written 18 books. I have several in print with major publishers. And I will have them there and be able to talk about, because everybody asks me, well, which one should I start with? Or so if I ask them what their issues are, I can usually guide them to the right book to start with.
And Rachel, thank you for your question, because I think this applies to a lot of parents and grandparents who are struggling to find the best ways to support our children in such a changing, complex society where the expectations of being able to do gaming or computer work or tech work and then the minimal time in school for any sort of arts. I think one of the key things Lucia said is that as parents, we can be the greatest guide and influence for our children's success. You know, that by learning these methods and then sharing them with our children and actually doing these methods ourselves and modeling that behavior for our children, we have the highest rate of success. Not only as we as parents, we are going to benefit from the journaling process and being creative, because one of the saddest things I ever have seen are all of the people in my life who never allow themselves to do anything creative anymore, that they only look to their children. Oh, my children are the artists. But imagine how powerful it would be to take on these creative journaling projects, these prompts and books simultaneously with your children. Thank you for calling, Rachel.
Well, I actually have a book that I wrote prompted by what you were just saying, those exact sentiments. It's called The Creative Journal for Parents. Because I realized that although I'd written these books about working with children and teens, that if the adults, especially the parents and even the grandparents who are raising children now, didn't have a sense about their own inner life, that it wasn't going to really work. So the Creative Journal for Parents also spells out journal prompts that include drawing and writing and really help parents find their own inner wisdom. I was a child development specialist. I taught at Santa Monica College in child development. And I found that parents were so insecure, and they still are. Well, this expert said this, and that one says that. My doctor says this, and my grandmother said that, and then my mother, and then my next-door neighbor's telling me this. What should I do? And the Creative Journal for Parents is designed to help people stop and go inside and say, what works for me and my child? Never mind about what everybody else is saying. Emotionally, what feels right to me? Intuitively, what feels right? And that can be arrived at through journaling about parenting issues. And that's why I wrote that book.
805-781-3875. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Lucia Capicchioni. She's an author. She's an arts therapist. She's a founding, I don't know what it's called, member or founding piece of the expressive arts therapy movement.
Yeah, the International Expressive Arts Therapy Association was founded way after all the other art therapy associations were, because there were a lot of us that were using all the modalities, and none of it fit into the box of dance therapy, poetry therapy, art therapy. So we decided to form an organization. It's called the International Expressive Arts Therapy Association, with offices in San Francisco. And it's a wonderful organization because it brings together people from all over the world. Again, it's not in the box of America, you know, the American this or the Canadian that. It's just for anybody all over the world. And we've had some very interesting influences internationally there. So I'm very excited about that organization.
So for people who are still a little skeptical about the mental health component, talk a bit about your research and what you found as to why this journaling is effective in alleviating emotional distress.
Well, what we found, I think, most dramatically was in the schools, although I've worked with adults all my career as an art therapist. But observing children in the schools, as I've had to do in training teachers and visiting classrooms and supervising teachers, what I've become aware of on all levels and at all grades is that creative expression that does not have judgment attached to it, that just allows what's inside to come out in service of personal growth and mental health, is just a huge boon to anyone's life. We've seen it with the children. In the schools where we've seen these fantastic gains, emotional, social gains, academic gains, just everything you can imagine that you would hope to achieve in education. We've seen all of that in our research projects. And it's because the children are able to, before they try to learn and take information in, they're able to let out what's in there that's boiling up. Fear, anxiety, anger, you know, joy, whatever it is, just pure energy to let it out in a creative way. But when I say creative, my journal method is one that absolutely requires confidentiality and privacy. And that's true in the schools. And if a school district won't promise that the children's journals are without grades and that they are private and confidential and locked up after they're used in the classroom so no one can read them, I will not go into the program. I will not engage in a contract with them. So every school district we've ever worked with has honored my guidelines. And this is really important. Journals need to be private. Because if they're not, we're worrying about, oh, I better not write this or do that because somebody else, oh, what if he sees it? What if she looks at this? Oh, what are they going to think? We've got to get out of that mode. So one of the great values of journaling of any kind, but especially this kind with the artwork, is that you're doing things and you're really looking at, okay, how am I stopping myself with judgment, self-judgment? And that comes up when you're doing, especially with an art journal. Self-judgment comes up immediately. This whole thing about, oh, this is going to be ugly art. Oh, I don't have any talent. If you have to confront that right off the bat coming in the door to this method, you're way ahead of the game because that's an issue that we all need to deal with.
So what about with adults? Tell me a little bit about some success with adults who were struggling and found relief with the journal.
Well, I think some of the most dramatic cases were people who came to my classes and didn't realize that they could use this to heal themselves physically. This was a shock to me. In my very first journal class, I had two women. They both had chronic conditions that were 30-year standing. One of them had bladder infections, and her dialogue appears in the Creative Journal, in the Exercise My Body Myself. She did a dialogue with her bladder, and the four questions you ask when you're doing healing dialogue is, what are you? And the bladder tells you, or the body dialogue, with your non-dominant hand. So your dominant hand is asking the questions. The non-dominant, the right brain, the emotions, the unconscious, is answering. And her bladder basically told her that she was judging herself, that she was afraid of her anger, and she was angry at her fear. And by the end of the dialogue, she felt better. And her doctor had already agreed with her that if she continued with this cystitis, which she'd had for 30 years on and off, he was going to put her in the hospital. At the end of that dialogue, it went away.
And so I think the power, the magic, and I hate to use the word magic because I think it diminishes the real healing capacities of things like creative journaling or expressive arts therapy. And for those of you who don't know expressive arts therapy, it includes all of the modalities. As Lucia was saying, it can be dancing, it can have drama involved, it can be modeling with clay, it can be
Scribbling with crayons.
Expressive arts means allowing a voice from the unconscious to be heard. Because talk therapy is phenomenal, but we're limited by our words because we filter our words when they're coming out of our head. And the reason that expressive arts therapy or art therapy in general is so powerful is because it unblocks that filter. It allows a direct access into our unconscious. And there's a lot of belief that most ailments, physical ailments, and a lot of our emotional ailments are locked in us, emotions that have never been expressed, right? So if we have pushed down anger or sadness or fear or trauma into our body for years and years and not allowed ourselves to experience them or look at them or give them voice or let them go, we start to have backaches, stomach aches, chronic headaches, bladder infections.
Cancer.
Cancer. Mm-hmm. Cancer is a great example of something that's eating away at us, eating away at us. There is a powerful component of needing to let go of these stories that are being stored inside of us to have a healing.
The most dramatic example was Pamela, who came to my first journal class with chronic sinus congestion for 30 years. She was 35 years old. And she went home and did this journal prompt that I gave her, the one I just described. What are you? How do you feel? Why do you feel that way? And what can I do to help you? And in the middle of that, with her non-dominant hand, she started to sob, and her non-dominant hand wrote, I miss my mommy. And then she remembered for the first time that at 5 years old, when her parents got a divorce and left her to live with her grandparents, her grandmother had said to her, Pamela, be a brave little girl and don't cry. The sinus congestion started at that point. And she remembered hearing her grandmother's voice for the first time in 30 years. Long story short, she sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. She came to class the next week. She said, this is the first time I've been able to really breathe freely in my life. And she said, I don't know if this is going to last. Well, long story short, it did. She passed away a couple of years ago, but I stayed in touch with her all those years since 1976. And she never had sinus congestion after that. So what was she doing? She was holding the unshed tears in the place where your tears are in your sinus. And once she sobbed them out, then there was no reason for them to be there anymore. So she taught me everything I know about psychosomatic conditions. And I think that most conditions are psychosomatic. Unless you've been hit by a car while crossing the street, which I did in 1968, accumulative conditions of emotions getting stored. The body is a closet. I'm absolutely convinced of it. I've worked with enough cancer patients and people with other life-threatening and chronic diseases to know that the body is a closet. If emotions don't get expressed, then they're going to get stuffed in the body. And some people stuff them in one part of the body, others another. Migraine headaches, low backaches, whatever. I've trained a local acupuncturist who uses this method. She took my Creative Journal Expressive Arts certification training because she agrees, and Chinese medicine teaches this. They have ascribed an emotion to every set of internal organs. I mean, this is ancient teaching, so it's nothing new, but we definitely see it in living color, so to speak, when we're doing this kind of therapy.
And we also see it in conjunction with body work, right? Because a lot of people who do massage have a lot of release on the table. And I miss the days when we had a good amount of body work and therapy together. You know, it's so dicey now to do any sort of touching or physical contact and along with therapy because of all the legal issues, but so much can be expressed through massage and releasing these blocked areas.
I was getting Rolfed when I wrote this book. Exactly at the same time that I wrote the book, I was getting Rolfed every week, and I started taking expressive dance classes. And I'm absolutely convinced that, and I started skateboarding, and I was 39 years old. So I am convinced that doing all of those physical things before I ever became an expressive arts therapist, I was just really a new art therapist at the time. But all of those physical modalities, I am absolutely convinced, really contributed to the creation of this book.
So for people that are listening and saying, okay, I want to try some alternative ways to tap in to my pain or my sadness or my physical ailments or my depression or anxiety, how do they get started? Because the books are one piece, but are there therapists that do this work?
Well, I am training people as fast as I can all over the world. I just did an intensive. We do a year-long work-study program where professionals come for a week and train with me. They do all of this. It's very immersive. They're involved in all of these activities. And then they go home, and we have my field supervisor, Dr. Marcia Nelson, supervise their field work. They work with clients. They work with groups. They read several of my books. They integrate this into whatever they're doing. If they're an acupuncturist or a body worker or a school teacher or a therapist, whatever it is they're doing, they take my method and they just kind of weave it in. And then at the end of the year, they come back for another intensive and they get certified as a Creative Journal Expressive Arts practitioner. And we have people from all over the world that are trained in doing this work. And that's my big mission now, is to train professionals. I would really love to bring this work into the county schools.
Lucia.com,
L-U-C-I-A-C. Lucia C.
So L-U-C-I-A-C.com. If you'd like to find out more about Lucia's work, if you'd like to order books, she will be in Cambria on Saturday, the Painted Lily Gallery, starting at 1 o'clock, and on Sunday at Barnes & Noble in San Luis Obispo at 2 o'clock. If you'd like to meet her, find out more about her work, pick up a copy of the Creative Journal in its 35th anniversary printing. Lucia, thank you so much for taking the time to come in today and talk to me.
Thank you.
I'm excited to do some creative journaling, and thank you, as always, for being a part of our show. We'll be back next week to talk about our veterans and to honor them and all of their work and to talk about the importance of service. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. As always, I appreciate you supporting Public Radio, KCBX.